Want to be a part of the conversation? Then let us know on the TNT Radio Interactive Live Chat Room at tntradio.live. Lighting the fuse for freedom. Today's News Talk, TNT Radio. You're listening to Chris Smith on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
G'day, g'day. Welcome to TNT Radio, broadcasting across the globe and, more importantly, directly to you, wherever you may be. Thank you so much for your company. I have a packed, jammed program in store for you today because Donald Trump is still waiting for the district attorney to come knocking. It's been 48 hours now. Where is he? I wonder whether he dared them to chase him and they crumbled under the pressure. Is it a lack of courage? Is it a lack of evidence? Is it the fact that they're getting pushback from the American public over this and they've run as far as they can? I don't know. Who knows? We've also had a prime minister today choke up in tears when telling his voters to tick yes. Bizarre. What was that all about? Maybe you could explain it for me. And a no-name political aspirant is on the brink of wiping out an infamous Green MP who pretends to be conservative. These are just some of the big stories that have dropped for us, and we will jump on over the next 2 hours together. Do not go anywhere. If you need to move at all, make your way to the telephone and come and tell us what you think. There's a good idea. If you're phoning in from Australia or Kiwi land, you can phone this number, 1-800-670-310, 1-800-670-310. As I keep saying, put it in your phone. Make sure you've got that number ready to go for the time that you ring TNT Radio today, tomorrow, into the future, and want to have your say. Although today's a brilliant day to do so. What did you think of Anthony Albanese's crocodile tears? If you want to call in from the UK, here's the number, 033-0024-1026, or the US or Canada, 1-888-201-6425. Now, shortly, I'll go through everything we know today about this pending arrest of a president. I've got to say, we don't know much at all. No one really knows what's going on behind the scenes. For a country that, well, pretty well leaks like a sieve when it comes to politics, nothing has been leaked from the district attorney's office. Maybe he's in the fetal position under his desk, do you think? But what a joke this has become. And the Democrats, I'm sorry, just look like amateurs the way this is being played out. But I'll speak with a political animal, an author, a broadcaster, Denver's own Bill McIntosh, on the program today about where this is heading and how damaging is this waiting game. How damaging is it? Maybe Trump has simply called their bluff. Anyway, for the governing administration, for the Biden administration, it is damaging. Has to be. It's got to be hurting. But obsession and addiction to one outcome and one individual will do that to you, won't it? Now, having lived in China for two of my years, a couple of decades ago now, I have a real interest in what happens in the Middle Kingdom. And as everyone who follows the bouncing news ball knows, China wants Taiwan. They claim they need reunification. Of course, they never had the bond that they claim that they had in centuries past. So that's all BS. But how will this happen? How will this happen? Gee, I've heard some theories. There's an interesting new theory circulating that Chinese patriots have already embedded themselves in Taiwanese workplaces, including the military. I'll speak with retired US Marine Colonel Grant Newsham today about whether he thinks the invasion has begun and whether it will really lead to a world war. I just think as long as Joe Biden's around, I cannot see it happening. The way he has been as limp as any president could be over Ukraine and Russia tells me that he will back off at the last moment. And are you telling me that when China wants to take Taiwan, they'll give America a chance to turn up on the doorstep and stop them? Mm-mm. Now, the man at the centre of Australia's first church-based violent riot this week, Mark Latham, will join us again today. We'll get an update from Mark on that crazy clash in Sydney, plus why the Prime Minister broke down and shed a tear today. Mark, maybe Mark's psychological prowess can come to the fore. But he was simply telling Australians about the latest referendum question, and he thanked all his Indigenous friends for putting in the hard work, and then he was waterworks. Why? Why? He's either a little bit tired after all the hard work, or maybe Albo knows that the referendum will fail, and he's crying about that defeat already. A defeat, I might add, which should culminate in the resignation of the Prime Minister. The One Nation MP will also tell us about the backflip with Triple Pike performed today by the Premier of New South Wales, Dominic Perrottet. He's backflipping over the Eraring coal-fired power station. You see, they all do that when they realise how minuscule the power is that's drawn from unreliable renewables. See, when push comes to shove, they think, well, we better keep the lights on here. And you know what? The only way to keep the lights on is to keep fossil fuels burning, is to keep baseload power on, because renewables cannot supply baseload power. They do not supply baseload power in any location in the entire world. But we'll discuss all of that. Energy, an important point in the election coming up in New South Wales this weekend. We'll discuss that with Mark Latham. One of the most fascinating mini battles going on right now leading up to Saturday's New South Wales election is the battle to unseat the Treasurer of the state, the man who should really find a home with the Green Party, not the Liberal Party, Matt Keane. I'll speak with a candidate fighting very hard at the moment to win the seat of Hornsby and save us all from Matt Keane. He deserves our thanks. Now, bear in mind, Matt will be the opposition leader after this weekend if his party, the government, is tossed out. The leader of the party. Can you believe that? So we need to barrack for this Liberal Democrat, Jeff Grimshaw, as loudly as we possibly can. I'll do my bit. I'll get him on the radio. Now, the pundits are predicting that there'll be a 16% swing against Matt Keane in that seat. So whatever Jeff Grimshaw is doing, it's working. That is not enough, mind you, to unseat Matt Keane, but you never know until the show. Jeff will join us on the program a little bit later. I've got a stack more to tell you about and to have my say on, but it's time, people, we need to get into all of this. You are with Chris Smith, back on the airwaves for 2023 on Global Network, tntradio.live.
Your news when you need it.
They cover the important stories.
This is today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
So, despite all the tension and the predictions, there's no sign of charges being laid today against Donald Trump. Everyone's gone Betty Byes. What is happening in the office of the district attorney? Has Alvin Bragg got cold feet? Is he in the fetal position under his desk? Now, what we do know is that the Manhattan grand jury, which is weighing charges against the former president in connection to the Stormy Daniels hush payment investigation, did not meet on Wednesday. Now, most commentators are saying that this is an indication that the DA is moving to prepare the process for charging. But who really knows that? That is pure speculation. But the grand jurors were called on Wednesday morning and told they were not needed during the day as scheduled. They were expected to be there. This is coming from ABC News. But they were told to prepare to reconvene tomorrow. What does that mean? Now, the speculation from someone at ABC News is that they'll possibly hear from at least one additional witness. Becomes even more confusing, doesn't it? And the Manhattan District Attorney's Office are saying nothing, declined to comment. But the District Attorney Bragg may have also bitten off more than he can chew. He's developed this rather personal and political infatuation to nail Trump on anything. And this is where it begins to reflect badly on the Democrats. Bragg has conjured up this case against Trump by taking an alleged misdemeanor, a violation within business records, to get his man. Something, I should add, he avoided doing when he first came into the job. There wasn't enough for him to charge Donald Trump. But I cannot see this case doing anything but strengthen support for Donald Trump. And the polls are suggesting that this is already happening. It'll make it more likely that he becomes the president again. And that is not what the Democrats intended this to do. It's backfired on them. And maybe because it backfired, they don't want to touch it. They won't go ahead with it. And if Trump is charged, you can be sure that at some stage into the future, probably when a court throws the case out, that Alvin Bragg himself will find himself before Congress. Republicans such as Brian Stile are moving already to ensure that Bragg is brought before Congress to face the heat. In a letter revealed this week, they wrote, "This indictment comes after years of your office searching for a basis, any basis, on which to bring charges, ultimately settling on a novel legal theory untested anywhere in the country and one that federal authorities declined to pursue. If these reports are accurate, your actions will erode confidence in the even-handed application of justice and unalterably interfere in the course of the 2024 presidential election." Here is Wisconsin's Brian Stile on Fox News.
I think it's incredibly concerning when we see such a politically motivated move by the Manhattan DA. All this at a period of time when that DA should be going after actual criminals in the streets of New York. So many people in New York City don't feel safe walking on the streets, and yet we have the DA using his resources to advance a political agenda. It's why Jim Comer, Jim Jordan, and myself came forward asking questions. Are they coordinating with federal agencies, including the DOJ? Are they using your federal tax dollars to pursue a political agenda rather than making the streets of New York City safe? That's why we're calling them to come and testify and provide documentation to all three of our committees.
Look, in general, the people of New York don't have too much time for Donald Trump. But even they would be asking the question, why are you focusing on the trivial when you should be making sure that I'm safe? Now, what Bragg might be considering as well is that he cannot reply on former Trump lawyer, or can't rely, I should say, on former Trump lawyer Michael Cohen. Now, after originally throwing Donald Trump under the bus, Cohen has now done a bit of a U-turn. He's recanted his earlier statements and claims that the money for Stormy Daniels was intended to help Trump's campaign fend off a damaging story, and that Trump was not involved. Either way, the DA cannot rely on this disreputable character, Michael Cohen. Meanwhile today, have you caught up with this? Twitter was flooded with an AI-generated deep fake series of photos of former President Donald Trump resisting arrest and trying to run from police ahead of this potential New York indictment. Have you seen these yet? You've got to go in search of the images. They are brilliantly fake. The fabricated images, which have been viewed more than 4 million times already, they appear to show Trump yelling and fighting off at least two NYPD officers. In others, he's depicted breaking free from the cops and bolting as Melania Trump and Donald Trump Jr. shout in protest of his arrest. It is so real. Now, many of the disturbingly realistic-looking images were shared widely by Twitter users who falsely claimed they were legitimate. No one could look at them and say, oh, they're fake. You just couldn't tell. Another deep fake created by a Twitter user known as O'Keefe Reborn also claims to show a mugshot of Trump while others show him behind bars pumping iron in one of those orange jumpsuits. Now, I'm here to tell you he looks very good in orange, Donald Trump. Now, I'm not willing this to happen, but he actually does look good in orange. Have a look. The fakes are so real, it'll blow you away. It is scary to think what IT graphic designers can do if they really wanted to come after you. This is TNTRadio.live. Now, Bill McIntosh is the host of Quorum Radio on Denver's AM 560 KLZ. He's a publisher of the dirty, locked-away history of the Democrat Party, and he joins us right now. Welcome to TNT Radio, Bill McIntosh.
How are you, Chris? It's great to be here. Calling from Peru, of all places.
Peru?
I'm an expat American. Yes, sir. Funny but true. I live in Peru. So anyhow, but I was listening
can you
to
just, you. Can got you just great... explain that story for us before we move on?
It's I'll try to be as brief as possible. I ended up basically marrying a beautiful Peruvian, and we all moved to Peru. And my kids, I have six kids, and five are in the States. And it's been quite an experience, but you know, I've always had my, for a long, long time, I've had my toes and the fingers in the news. And I, by the way, I have to commend you. You're really well informed about what's going on in the United States. I'm very impressed about that. The Australians have been great allies. And by the way, something funny today. Speaking of Peru, I called. You're gonna, this is mind blowing. I called Michael Cohen today. I called him.
Oh, did
today.
You?
Why? I talked to him. I talked to him twice this week because I set up interviews. I work as a producer. I set up interviews for Patrick Bet-David's Valuetainment YouTube channel with over 4 million subscribers. So they wanted to get Michael Cohen to fly into – we were going to fly him into – we wanted to fly him into Fort Lauderdale, you know, to bring him – sit him down in our pet Valuetainment studio. So – but the funny thing is about – why did I bring this up? It's just funny, but Michael Cohen – answers the call and he goes to me, what's this about? I mean, it's kind of weird. You're where are you calling from? It's kind of a weird phone call. I'm like, yeah, I happen to be an expat. I live in Peru. And so, but the funny thing is, why did I bring this up? He's frazzled. I said, well, is you know, Mr. Cohen, I sent you an email. Oh yes. I sent him an email at his request regarding, an invitation to be on the Valuetainment Patrick Bet-David podcast. And so, but the thing is that most people nowadays, how do they respond? Not, I mean, forget celebrities, normal, ordinary people who are pretty busy. They see a call come through with a bunch of zeros, like it does when I call from Peru, and they simply don't answer it. But he is so tied up in this whole thing, this fascination with sort of being at the center of attention.
Yes.
And he's starting to lose a grip. Michael Cohen... I literally feel sorry for the guy. And there's a fellow that I don't think you mentioned him, Chris, Robert Costello, who used to be a Michael Cohen advisor. And Michael Cohen had him as an advisor, and Robert Costello gave the grand jury testimony on behalf of Donald Trump. Not that he works for Donald Trump or worked in the past for Donald Trump, but he sees Michael Cohen making a lot of misstatements of fact, if not outright lies. And why? What's this all about? He had six emails between you know the office of Robert Costello and I think Richard Citron is his law partner. And Michael Cohen. Michael Cohen was, you know, started working with him. He was in a moment of great emotional stress. He was like suicidal. He was thinking about jumping off of the roof of the Regis Hotel, I think. But they had all this email correspondence, Chris, and it was like 321 emails. And the you know this fellow Alvin Bragg, the Manhattan DA, is making reference to six of them instead of, you know, the whole context of all these 321 emails where you get the full, complete, total
context
picture.
Is important. Context is important. I've got to take a very quick break. Don't go anywhere, Bill. We've got the story about Peru and we've got the story about your approaches to Michael Cohen. Very interesting. We'll get back to Alvin Bragg in just a second. This is TNT Radio.
TNT Radio's Steve Malzberg.
Why is it happening? What's going to happen? What's the reaction going to be? Go ahead. The floor is yours.
I mean, this is a very, very disturbing thing to think that the government can use their power to weaponize the government and take hostage, in this case, a former president of the United States. I mean, this is just so unbelievably wrong and dangerous. Who do these people think they are? This is why we have a constitutional setup of government. And this is wrong beyond measure. I mean, I listen to MSNBC on occasion. Do I want these people arrested and thrown in jail? No. Do I disagree with President Biden? Yes. Do I want him thrown in jail for saying something I don't agree with? No. Do I think President Obama, former President Obama, should be rounded up and thrown in federal prison? No, of course not. This is very dangerous stuff. This is the stuff of banana republics.
The Steve Malzberg Show on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
A better business tip from TNT Radio. News Talk Radio listeners are some of the most active and involved listeners of any format. TNT Radio listeners rely on TNT Radio often as their primary source of information. They trust TNT Radio and are highly engaged with the content. If you'd like more information about advertising on TNT Radio, simply fill out your details on our contact page and we'll be in touch. To find out more, go to tntradio.live.
This is the Chris Smith Show on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
We've got Bill McIntosh on the line to talk about the possible charging of Donald Trump. Bill, to charge or not to charge? These are the questions facing Alvin Bragg. What the hell is happening?
I think this is it's a ridiculous political aspiration to get Donald Trump in order to win election to the district attorney's office in Manhattan. Absolutely reckless, foolish, and given the fact that there's a lot of crime in New York, it's not enough to say, "Oh well, we're number 15th in crime per capita." Look, all I know is New York is getting to be a hellacious place. It's not safe. I tell my sister who lives there to get the hell out. Yeah. This fellow has the temerity and the recklessness to run a campaign based on getting Trump. I mean, this is the gift that keeps on giving. The Democrat Party is absolutely obsessed. It's like the Democratic Party is Donald Trump's stalker. They can't get over him. And he's not the president anymore for 2 years, Chris. And so, but this fellow, Alvin Bragg, it's foolish for him. I think he has to discreetly pull away from it. He should not indict him. Why? Because Robert Costello said, who was testifying on behalf of Donald Trump, not because he works for him, but because he thinks there's an injustice going on here. And he basically said that he was talking to these grand jurors, and like five or six of them are shaking their head listening to him. Why? Because the guy's making sense. Michael Cohen is a convicted perjurer. Okay, Michael Cohen is somebody who I feel sorry for the guy, but I'm sorry. He's met 15 times apparently with Alvin Bragg's office. This is a man who's just not well. This is a man who's been through the ringer. That's a little bit on Donald Trump too, because Donald doesn't always treat people the best possible way. Sometimes he lacks a little bit finesse. All right, leave it at that. But the thing is that this is a man, Michael Cohen, who I don't think is well. I don't think you can base largely your case on, a business record violation. That's laughable. We're talking about the president of the United States that he's going after him on something that is a misdemeanor, and the whole he's trying to tie it together with campaign financing violations. And the feds walked away from that. Okay. This is absolutely foolish on the part of Alvin Bragg. But there's another issue here, and this is important to mention. Unfortunately, we've become incredibly tribalistic in the United States. I don't know if this is happening in Australia. I hope it's not. But in America, I mean, Joe Biden in 2016 or 2017 actually said that he thinks it's a good thing for the United States to become a majority non-white country. Okay. Now, I talk about all this in the context of the backdrop in the past two years of America, the George Floyd riots, the Black Lives Matter movement, and this whole idea of systemic racism on the part of whites, and that we have to defund the police because they were formed, a century and a half ago to be slave catchers, and that's what they're all about. And this whole idea, it's all tied into tribal politics, okay? And this is actually the definition of insanity. They keep on going this route of applying the racial card. It doesn't give any dividends to them. Their schools in the inner city are appalling. They're a disgrace to the United States. We spent huge amounts of money per capita on education, on fighting crime, on creating jobs, and all sorts of welfare. And it doesn't get people out of the economic ditch. And the Democrat Party doesn't understand. It's the party of Jim Crow, slavery, the Ku Klux Klan, and of perpetual living on the plantation into the 21st century, to put a stop.
They're playing all the wrong cards, Bill, all the wrong cards, and they're shooting themselves in the foot by playing those cards. And I've been watching some street talk responses on some of the American television news programs. This is never scientific. It's hit and miss. But I get the impression that Americans don't want any president, whoever it may be, pursued in this way. They want to feel safe in their own city, and the Democrats just don't get it.
Exactly. See, this gets back to a fundamental problem. The division of the country is such that the Democrats look at all the different ethnic groups in America, and they say, well, you know, some whites will vote for us, but they tend to go a little bit more to the Republicans. But so what do we have to do? We've got the black vote. It goes 90% Democrat. We cannot lose it. We've got to be grooming it. We've got to be taking care of it. We've got to be supplying it with freebies and all sorts of benefits. And they can't wean themselves off of it. So unfortunately, we have a huge problem with daddy isn't home in the black community. We have a tremendous problem with black fatherlessness, and it's devastating to people of color in the United States. Also, to other racial groups too, whites and also Hispanics, but it's unbelievable with blacks. It's like, what, 70, 75%. And so it means that you basically have children growing up with the neighborhood kids, with the neighborhood gangs. And the whole idea of it takes a village is because dad's not home.
Yeah. One final question for you. If Trump is charged, say, tomorrow, are we likely to see hundreds of thousands of his supporters hit the streets?
No. It's not going to happen. We live in fear in the United States right now because we've seen what's happened with the January 6th, so-called insurrection, which is not. And what we're going to see is a lot of people who will take other means to let their protests be known. And you know something? People are going to be very angry, and a lot of asymmetric, let's say, protesting could take place. We don't know what it's going to look like, but people are furious. They don't like it, but they don't want it. The FBI has become an enemy of the United States people. Used to be we were proud to say, my son's a member of the FBI. Now we say these people have it in to get us.
Yeah.
And we're taxpayers.
Yeah. Very,
so
very true.
I think it's,
all right. You're a champion. Thank you so much for coming onto the program. And I appreciate your very kind words about our interpretation of what's happening at the moment. We wait with bated breath, as they say. Bill McIntosh, thank you.
Thank you, Chris.
Good on you, Bill McIntosh, the publisher of The Dirty, Locked Away History of the Democrat Party. Now, at TNT Radio, you know we never go home. We're always next to this microphone. We are committed to bringing you our take on the biggest topics of our time. We broadcast live 24/7, online, globally, no matter what. We've got you covered on TNT Radio.
Now, TNT Radio News.
You are completely obsessed with
breaking news.
Matt Boyland here with a look at your TNT headlines. The White House is once again being called out for its hypocrisy after blasting China for choosing to side with Russia over the war in Ukraine. Russia says it's repelled an attack on its warships in the Black Sea. And the award-winning US journalist who exposed Washington's role in the attack on Europe's Nord Stream pipelines has accused the White House of feeding fake news to the media in an effort to cover up its involvement.
Globalist agendas, democratic rights at risk, corruption, propaganda. It never stops. Listen to TNT Radio anywhere you go. Ask Alexa or Google to play TNT Radio or download the TNT Radio app for free from the App Store or Google Play. Today's news talk. This is TNT Radio.
Welcome to the program. So good to have your company. If you'd like to weigh in on the conversation today, do not hesitate. Jump on our talkback lines. Now, the long-awaited Donald Trump-Ron DeSantis battle for the 2024 Republican presidential nomination, I think, is about to crank up or even get nasty. And I say that because although our attention seems to be drawn on Alvin Bragg and whether he will come out of his hidey hole and let Donald Trump know that he needs to go from Florida to New York and walk into his office and be arrested and charged, while we're all focused on that, I just noticed that tomorrow Ron DeSantis is cranking up the rhetoric towards who will be his eventual opponent for the Republican nomination, Donald Trump. Now, he's done an interview on Fox Nation's Piers Morgan Uncensored. It airs in full tomorrow. And I get the feeling that we're seeing the first sign of the Florida governor take his gloves off. He'll begin lobbing direct missiles at the 45th president tomorrow. Now, as one commentator wrote, This signals that DeSantis is moving to a more active 2024 posture and giving us a clearer glimpse of his strategy. I think that's an understatement. I think DeSantis is applying the blowtorch. He has to turn the polls around because Donald has a stranglehold on that nomination. Now, teasers from that Morgan interview make it clear that DeSantis is determined to challenge Trump on, among many things, the handling of the pandemic. When asked about specific differences between himself and Trump, DeSantis pointed to the COVID-19 response. Have a listen to this.
What do you think of the differences?
Well, I mean, I think there's a few things. I mean, obviously, you know, the approach to COVID was different. I mean, you know, I would have fired somebody like Fauci. I think that he got way too big for his britches, and I think he did a lot of damage. I also think just in terms of my approach to leadership, you know, I get personnel in the government who have the agenda of the people and share our agenda. If you bring your own agenda in, you're gone. We're just not gonna have that. So the way we run the government, I think, is no daily drama, focus on the big picture and put points on the board. And I think that that's something that's very important.
Apparently in this interview to be aired tomorrow, and I'll sift through it tomorrow for you and we'll talk about it on air, DeSantis did not say explicitly that he's more electable than Trump, but the way he describes himself and Trump certainly suggests what's coming. DeSantis is presenting himself as a steady politician. We don't like drama. You heard what he said just then. We don't do that. No daily drama. But he's lit the wick. And I can tell you the Donald Trump-DeSantis war will begin officially from tomorrow. All right. Recent moves by the Chinese government suggest that Beijing is preparing for an invasion, or as they say, a reunification with Taiwan. For instance, China's newly enacted law on reservists delays the retirement age for reserve officers to 60 from 55. They're looking at more reservists. Since March the 1st, local defense mobilization officers have been established in at least 10 provinces to help the government shift to a wartime footing. And at the 20th National Congress of the party last year, the Central Politburo elevated five provincial party secretaries with experience in the defence industry. And there are a few other indicators as well, but I won't get waylaid by all of that. It does mean that they are preparing for a military invasion. Now, whether the military invasion actually happens or not, we're not sure. Now, the man who is probably best able to answer this question and others is Grant Newsham. He is a senior fellow with the Center for Security Policy. He's also a research fellow at the Japan Forum for Strategic Studies, focusing on Asia-Pacific defense. He's a retired U.S. Marine colonel, and his name is Grant Newsham. Grant, welcome to the program.
Well, thanks very much. Glad to be here.
I've got a couple of theories about all of this, and one of them was echoed in an opinion piece in the Australian newspaper today, but it was reprinted from the Wall Street Journal. And I'll just read one paragraph from this from writer Simone Gao. After seizing power in the mainland in 1949, the Communist Party built united front departments throughout its organization. Thanks to Taiwan's many ties with mainland China, the party has penetrated Taiwan's businesses, media, religious groups, political parties, and even the military. Beijing's ability to influence and overtake through these routes should not be underestimated. Has the invasion already begun, Grant?
Certainly the preparations have. And what you've just described is, according to Chinese theory of war, is very much a part of warfare. The actual shooting part from the Chinese perspective is sort of not quite an afterthought, but it's something that you apply when you have softened up the target. And when you do make your move, this subversion that you've already set in place, and Taiwan has just been on the receiving end of it for decades, plus the fifth columnist that you've got in place, the special forces that you've easily moved into Taiwan and set them up, just using, for example, the smugglers' routes that are practically almost a scheduled boat run every day, and everybody knows it. So moving, say, these behind the line sort of forces into Taiwan, and you don't need a whole lot of them. You just need enough to cause enough trouble, enough confusion, and to hit some key targets, and then combine that with a so-called kinetic assault, and that's the popular word these days for actually shooting. And so the war actually has begun. The Chinese see it as a spectrum, a much longer term operation than we see it. We see it as like a 100-yard dash where the parties get to the line, they shake loose, and somebody gives the go, and then the fight starts. But to the Chinese, there's this these other warfares, these other fronts that they attack on over an extended period of time, as I said, to soften up the target. And that united front works activity, the subversion that you describe, not to mention suborning active and retired Taiwanese military officers. That's all part of it's all part of the equation. And as I say, it's setting up Taiwan for an invasion, and it will make one more successful. It'll improve prospects for success if they've done all that, and they have been doing it. It's worth noting that in the last presidential election in Taiwan, that about 40% of the voters actually supported candidates that favor something pretty darn close to going back, or let it, better said, letting the Chinese communist take them over. So that's a lot of people. So the Chinese have been very successful, as I said, in softening up Taiwan for an invasion.
Which has got to be very, very important, as you say, in the plan, the long-term plan. And having spent 2 years living in Beijing, I understand the concept of having time on their side. Everything is involved in a long-term plan. You know, all of us foreigners tend to want to see things done next month, not the Chinese. They approach it from a very different proposition. The Chinese government officials in particular see things playing out over a longer period. Having said all of that, though, and they want to reunify with Taiwan by 2027, they're not going to wait to 2027, are they?
There's a good chance they won't. It's a little bit like predicting who's going to win the Super Bowl. everybody's got a theory as to who's going to win, and they can make a very compelling case. I can think of at least a dozen good scenarios for what could happen in Taiwan. I've got my own.
What is your own?
But what it is I'm looking at the next Taiwan presidential election in early 2024. And if the KMT candidate, which is effectively the soft on China or outright pro-China candidate, wins, at that point, I think Taiwan thinks that it just might be able to get what it wants by more bullying, more pressure, and also have their proxy, their front men, just shift Taiwan over to China and just undercut Taiwan's defenses to the point just cannot defend itself. And I think they think they can. So if they have their guy in the presidential office, I think at that point, they probably think they can win just through political warfare without fighting. But if the other party's candidate wins, I think it's very different. The other party, you have some people who want outright independence, but most of them just want nothing to do with mainland China. They certainly don't want to be enslaved by the Chinese communists. But so that's the other side. And if they win, that, I think, will cause Beijing, cause Xi Jinping to really take the gloves off and give the go order. So that would put us in about sometime in 2024, 2025, would be my guess. And I think China does have the military capability to think that they could successfully attack and defeat Taiwan and keep the Americans at bay. And one thing they're going to look at very carefully is the state of affairs in the United States, and also the amount of backbone that they detect in the whatever administration.
Not much backbone now. Now would be a good time, I would have thought, Grant.
Well, yeah. But I still think they can get it. They think they can get it without fighting. And that line about backbone, unfortunately, it is how the Chinese look at it. And when they look at it, and they who they think, well, who is it that scares us? Unfortunately, with this administration, I don't know who that is. They're very familiar with many of these people by virtue of them having done business for Chinese entities in the past, in the recent past. But nobody scares them. The previous administration, you had Mike Pompeo, Matt Pottinger, Dave Stilwell, Miles Yu, Peter Navarro. These guys, the Chinese did not like. And they were almost deferential towards the Trump administration. But the current crowd, unfortunately, and I'm not saying that with any pleasure, there's just nobody in there, I think, that puts the fear of God in Beijing. But I think they still have some hopes of getting the whole thing, getting Taiwan, without really having to fight very hard for it. Because if there is shooting, there is a good chance all of China's foreign trade is going to be cut, at least for some period of time. And their access to, say, food imports, energy imports, et cetera, their ability to export and earn that vital foreign currency that keeps the Chinese economy afloat and the Chinese Communist Party afloat, that is all at risk. So if you can just get it by that almost osmosis, where you can just sort of absorb Taiwan, create this sense of hopelessness in the Taiwan population, and rely on your proxies in the United States, Wall Street, the business class, the donor class that has so much influence on Capitol Hill, rely on them to sort of get the word out and threaten to cut off funding to Capitol Hill, that it's not worth defending Taiwan. It's just a small island close to China. And you'll hear this all the time now. One of the talking points is Taiwan cannot be defended. Well, China wants people to say that, but it's just not true. But you hear it all the time from the American commentariat. And that's something the Chinese like to hear. So I think they still think that they can that rely on all of that. An intimidation of Taiwan, subversion of America, America's proxies, and this constant military threat that they're posing to Taiwan with the circumnavigations, the threatening Air Force flights, etc. That I think they have some hope still of getting Taiwan without a fight, and they'd like to avoid a fight if they could. But I think they are indeed willing to roll the dice and pull the trigger if they have to. They've spent the last 20 years building up the most, a very powerful military, one that trains to attack Taiwan, successfully invade it. And as you noted at the beginning, they have got the subversion in place in Taiwan, and that's been wearing Taiwan down for a long time. It wouldn't entirely surprise me if while we think of Chinese invasion having to, go across the beaches, like at Normandy or Iwo Jima, perhaps one of the ports might open up for the Chinese, and that would simplify things quite a lot. And that's where the subversion, the fifth columnist, are so useful.
That would not surprise. Great analysis. Good to have you on the program, Grant. Thank you very much for your time.
My pleasure. Thanks very much for the opportunity.
No problem. Senior Fellow with the Center for Security Policy, a Research Fellow at the Japan Forum for Strategic Studies, focusing on Asia and the Pacific, Grant Newsham. So the foundations have already been laid. And as that opinion article in The Australian said today, the party has penetrated Taiwan's businesses, media, religious groups, political parties, and even military. And you can't underestimate the power of those foundations. Interesting, isn't it? Now, if you missed your favorite TNT radio show or interview, don't get upset. Simply listen back when you want to, wherever you want. Just visit episodes on the TNT radio website. That simple. We're also on all the major podcast platforms, including Apple, Google, Spotify, Amazon, Podbean, iHeart, and TuneIn. There's no reason to miss out on anything on TNT radio.
Another member of the ruling class elite praises China, saying we should all be emulating China's climate and government policies.
From Washington, D.C., this is the Morano Minute with your host, TNT Radio's Mark Morano.
President Joe Biden's Energy Secretary Jennifer Granholm has added her name to the list of people who praise China.
But I think China has done, has been very sensitive and has actually invested a lot in their solutions to achieve their goals. So we're hopeful that, you know, we can all learn from what China is doing.
Yes, the same China that's building a coal plant a week, that's engaging in rare earth mining, all while doing it with the lowest human rights and environmental standards on the planet. Secretary Granholm adds her name to a list of people, including New York Times columnist, United Nations climate chief Justin Trudeau, the Apple CEO, all praising China's one-party rule and climate policies. No wonder the elites love COVID lockdowns so much. It allowed the once-free West to emulate one-party authoritarian Chinese rule. This is Mark Morano for the Morano Minute on TNT Radio.
I've been driving for most of my life, and I've always been a safe driver. But as I've grown older, driving has become more challenging. Intersections feel busier. Driving in peak hour traffic and travelling longer distances is stressful. And driving at night or in bad weather is risky. Even small mistakes can be costly. Look for the signs. If driving is getting harder, there are alternatives. Make a plan to stop driving on your terms. Don't stop driving by accident. Think Road Safety, a message from the Government of South Australia.
Thanks for listening and being a part of the Chris Smith Show on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Is that the way this will play out? That's the way most of us would like it to play out if they have to reunify with Taiwan. And I doubt whether too many people in the United States or Australia or the UK have a personal interest in seeing Taiwan stay as it is. We'd prefer it that way. You know, keep those diplomatic ties, but leave it as is in a form of independence, although you can't use the I word when it comes to Taiwan and China. But having said that, would it make much of a difference if China decided to rule Taiwan? Really? China at the moment is reopening trade to various parts of the world. You'd hardly expect that it would shut down trade from Taiwan to the rest of the world, although it could. But that would be the way to do it, because anything is preferable to a world war. Which brings me to my seven-year-old twins. My twins are classic inquisitors. Like, everything is fascinating to them, and they ask every conceivable and inconceivable question about how things work and about what's about to happen, as you could imagine. Every day, morning and night. They want to ask about why they can't fly. They want to ask about when their grandparents are going to pass. They want to, like, this sort of stuff. Some of it's rather curly and rather sensitive. But they came home from a birthday party the other weekend, and they came up to me and they asked one of the curliest, a bit of a current affairs question, which you'd think I'd know the answer to and be fairly calm about answering. But it was tough. It was a question I bet other young people are asking of their parents and grandparents at this time too. They wanted to know whether there would be a World War III sometime soon. So they got the number right. And they wanted to know, will World War III be with China? Now, to be fair to them, it's not a question relegated to kids. Adults all over the world have contemplated this in recent times. And although Grant answered that question the best he could, I didn't have to ask the question because it's implied in any discussion about China and Taiwan. Will there be a war as a result of their need to take Taiwan? I've concluded that it's a possibility, not a probability. And when I speak with the likes of Grant Newsham, I'm even more convinced it's a possibility, not a probability. But the Chinese don't like losing face. They will take Taiwan some way. And then you've got the West, the United States in particular, committed to defying that invasion. That is a war. That is a world war. Now, that hasn't been the way I put it to my kids. They don't need to be concerned about such complex scenarios and the chances of an all-out war. I said, this is not likely, you guys. And there are many, many leaders who will do their best to make sure that any fights are sorted out. They'll talk and sort out their difficulties and differences. And I referred to the United Nations as a place where this resolution would come from. Of course, I promised to you that when they do get older, I'm going to tell them the sad truth about how weak, biased, and useless the United Nations really is. But that's for their teen years. That was convenient for me. And I was keen to know where they got this theory from. And apparently there were some older kids talking about it, and they were playing bombings and with their guns and pretending to do a war between China and the US. Anyway, I got my question answered. But is it a likelihood? You heard what Grant said there. What do you think about Grant's summation? Is it the fact that they will just assume Taiwan as opposed to invade Taiwan? Because as we've established today, they're already laying the foundation works for occupation of Taiwan. Or will there be a World War III? You know, you've got Xi Jinping in Moscow this week. We've already got a war going on in the world. And it's a war with a formidable opponent. Forget about Russia. When Russia and China team up, if that's their plan, they are a formidable opposition to the 30 nations that have gone into bed with NATO. There's your world war. And I've got to say, there's a major historic loss to NATO. Because any chance the West has of defeating that kind of bloc will require massive commitment, determination, and consensus from populations in the West, and I can't see that happening. Not like we saw in World War I or World War II. That won't happen. We've created a culture in the world of passive response to defence, and any military approach is frowned on. That's not the way we solve territorial battles. And all you got to do is see the way even Donald Trump and Joe Biden have exited from war zones in the last 10 years to know they don't want to fight. They don't want to fight if they can help it. But I cannot see the West extending itself beyond its commitment to Ukraine as it stands at the moment. And I can't see, therefore, there being a World War III out of Eastern Europe at this stage, nor, as you heard from Grant Newsham, out of Taiwan. Now, that might be terribly optimistic, and it might come back to bite me years down the track. I hope I'm right. I'd rather not have a world war in my lifetime. Some military commanders in the United States are obsessed with identifying the Pacific as a venue for the next global conflict. They are certain it will happen. They're saying probably, not possibly. But I wonder whether Americans think it's worthwhile saving Taiwan in the event of an invasion by China. And Grant touched on that just then. There's something very Ukraine about Taiwan. Yes, the world would be outraged. Americans would do their best to assist Taiwan as they're doing for Ukraine. But I doubt very much that they would like the president of the moment, whoever that might be, to send in ships, planes, and soldiers to the South China Sea. I can't see, even if that was a glimpse of how America should do it, I doubt whether that's sustainable. Joe Biden has suggested America would. He might think he would, but as soon as the public says, what the hell are you doing against the might of China over a minnow like Taiwan, I've got to say they'll kick him out. They'll send him to the first retirement home outside of Washington. He'll be kicked out of office at the next election. Now, there's a weird fascination about the possibility of a World War III, and maybe that's encouraged by our diet of war films. But that is all Hollywood. That is all fiction. There will be nothing resembling World War II or III in our future. There won't be tank-to-tank combat. There won't be landmines in fields or trench warfare. None of that. If someone wants to really eradicate an enemy, it'll come from nuclear weapons and hypersonic missiles. But I get the feeling it'll take a very special individual to go down that track. There are too many nuclear-equipped nations to have winners and losers. Too many. And I was reading an opinion piece on war from the Washington Journal this week, and they quoted a political expert from the Catholic University of America. This is what William Benson said about a world war. While World War III is unlikely, the alternative may not be much better, especially with the nation's own domestic political situation intensifying over a range of cultural and social issues. Instead, America should focus inward and care for its own internal needs first. I think that this is a cultural change that's occurring in the West, where we want to look after ourselves, where we want to be concerned about what's in our backyard, and we don't feel the need to commit to wars on the other side of the planet. Maybe you'd like to comment on that. Maybe you think that there'll be no World War III, or maybe you think we're being unfairly and ignorantly optimistic. See, I don't see Vladimir Putin being able to fire a nuclear weapon, knowing that the next nuclear weapon will come directly at the Kremlin, because he tries to protect himself. He's always thinking about protecting his own power in the Kremlin. He doesn't want to die for the sake of history or legacy. But maybe I did tell my kids some of the truth, but maybe their fears of a bloody war is not a likely scenario. Maybe it will be technologically based. Who knows? Maybe you've got a view on this. Come and give us a call on 1-800-670-310 from Australia and New Zealand, from the UK, 033-0024-1026, US and Canada, 1-888-201-6425. This is TNT Radio.